The gospel lesson for today continues on the theme sounded by that passage from 1 Timothy. Jesus tells a very familiar story, for he says, "There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. The poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, where he was being tormented, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. He called out, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in these flames.' But Abraham said, 'Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner evil things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from there to us.' He said, 'Then, Father, I beg you to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may warn them so that they will not also come into this place of torment.' Abraham replied, 'They have Moses and the prophets. They should listen to them.' He said, 'No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent.' He said to him, 'If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead.'" These are for us the words of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We're going to do something a little different this morning. I know, hang on to your pews, something different in church. That's striking and alarming at the same time. But we are going to do something a little different this morning. Instead of giving a sermon as such, I'm going to be sharing the pulpit this morning with Bill Guest as we share the stories of how God has called us into a life of ministry. I was doing a radio interview yesterday with a member of the congregation, and Larry Wrench asked me about the various ministries offered here at Highland Park United Methodist Church, and we talked about Carpenters for Christ and Night Owls and various ministries. And then Larry asked a very good question. He said, "And what is a minister?" And I responded, "Well, when I picture a minister, I usually think of someone in a robe and a stole, maybe standing in a pulpit or making a hospital visit, maybe preaching a sermon, presiding at the sacraments." But I said, "Larry, you know, the real truth is a minister is simply someone who serves. A minister is someone who serves. And all of us are able to serve. And since all of us can serve, all of us can be ministers. And indeed, I'm convinced that God calls all of us to be ministers, to be in ministry. Now, God has called a small number of us to the ordained ministry, a very specialized ministry of leading the church. But through our baptism, through the baptism that all of us share, God calls each and every one of us into a particular kind of ministry. But we also share in a common ministry, what Paul in his first letter to Timothy calls the pursuit of righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. All of us have a call into ministry. But the question is often, how do I hear God's call, or how do I know that it's God calling me and not my own sort of will or my own wishes? To what is God calling me? Is my little thing enough? Is it valid? Is it worthwhile? There are as many answers to those questions as there are individuals who hear the call, because God's call is as unique and as individual as we are. And so this morning, I'd like for us to hear stories of how God calls us. And I'd like this morning to begin with my friend Bill Guest, a lifelong and devout Methodist, whose story I think will inspire us all. Bill, welcome.
I'll set my timer here to make sure that I don't exceed the limit, and I'll make it short. I'm a little uncomfortable with the term call. It's not something that someone like me from a business background is used to using to describe what I do. But after Jeff suggested this and invited me to be here today, I started giving it some thought and tried to see if I could frame what I do in this context. I'll get to the point. My ministry is to refugees in Dallas. I live in a refugee community as of about a year and a half ago, and I do all of those things that someone does who has refugees to work with. They have extraordinary and seemingly endless challenges, and we work all the time doing all sorts of things that I would otherwise just take for granted. I guess if I wanted to pinpoint a call, so to speak, it would have been on August 30th of 2004, and that was the day. I lived in Los Angeles at that time and had for 20 or 25 years. And I read The Upper Room. I've had this on my refrigerator for the last 9 years. And sometimes I think to read it. The chapter and verse that morning were Isaiah 43:18 through 19. The Lord said, "Do not remember former things or consider the things of old. I am about to do a new thing. Now springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and the rivers in the desert." And then lady goes on in her devotional to write about green grass in her yard being lightly peppered with yellow leaves. It was a hot August, but already she was seeing the beginning of the change of the seasons. The thought for the day was, where is God nudging you to change? And when I read that, I got this very sort of bone-chilling thought that scuttered across my mind, and it was that I needed to move back here to Dallas. It was not something I ever thought of doing. And in that moment when it happened, I was like, no. That's not right. I've done enough, and I'm content to stay where I am. The problem was this thought persisted for the next year and a half. Finally, I capitulated in the latter part of 2006. I moved back to Dallas, and subsequently found myself in a process of events that led to my what I would describe as mission to helping the refugees. And it was came about when I, in the job I was doing, I had begun to develop a strange neurological problem. I lost use of my fine motor skills. I wasn't able to type a keyboard or to write legibly. And eventually it was either I was going to be let go with a severance package, or I'd have to accept the disability diagnosis that my neurologist had given me. I'm running out of time. So I opted to take disability. I found myself with a lot of time on my hands. I had often wondered in the past if there were any kind of contemplative community for Protestants. We see them historically, the Catholic Church, they have them even now. And so I Googled some search terms and nothing came up. A few days later, I thought, well, maybe I try again. So I Googled some different search terms, and lo and behold, there was a thing called Academy for Missional Wisdom, which is kind of a grandiose title, but it was missional, monastic, and Methodist, and it sounded about right. So there was a professor at Perkins who had jumped on board this bandwagon of a new movement that you may or may not have heard of. It is described variously as neo-monasticism and intentional living, and it's sort of modeled on the life of monasteries in the past, but we don't wear cowls and robes tied with rope and that sort of thing. The basic idea is we live in the community, the refugees in my case become a part of my life, I become a part of their lives, and we work together and live together in that way. It's been an extraordinary experience, not something I ever could have imagined 9 years ago when this upper room devotional showed up. And I'm continuing to work with refugees. We get about 2,000 a year here in Dallas. They come from conflict zones, refugee camps. The United Nations High Commission on Refugees decides which ones will be allowed to come to the United States, for example. They're sent all over the world. And they arrive here, the agencies, they get dispersed. The ones that come to Dallas, agencies and charities give them enough money to live for 3 to 4 months. It takes them 2 to 3 years to get established. So there's kind of a yawning gap there. And that's where I try to help them find jobs. But it's always like solving simultaneous equations. You need a car to get a job. You need a job to get a car. You need to speak English to get a good job. You need to go to Richland College, which is close to where we live, to learn English. And that's just the beginning of their problems. So from one perspective, it's a good job because you're never out of business. And I don't know how I, it's hard for me to conceive of that as being called. It seems immodest to me. Nonetheless, this is where I've ended up. And Jeff has been gracious enough to help me to understand this as having been a call. It's something I love doing. It's a lot better than business. And I would be glad to answer any questions about it after the service if anyone has any. But I have one other thing I do, which is I have to rush to the adults Sunday school class for the special needs that we started a little over a year ago, and I have to be there before they start arriving. But any other time, if anyone would like to talk about this refugee mission, I'd be delighted to give you more information. Thank you.
Sometimes the call comes as clearly as when you read the upper room. It wasn't as clear for me. I'm a product of the church. I grew up at Colonial Hills United Methodist in San Antonio, which I found to be a very nurturing faith community. I was welcomed as a child. I was acknowledged as someone having gifts as a youth. I sang in the youth choir. I participated in Sunday school. I was active in United Methodist Youth Fellowship. And I found church to be a very affirming experience as a young person. But then I went off to university in Atlanta, and not knowing any better, I joined another United Methodist church. I didn't quite figure out that college kids don't go to church on a regular basis, but I'm very glad to say they do, and I see some among us this morning. I'd gone off to Emory with the idea that I was going to go to law school, become an attorney, and use the law as a means of getting into electoral politics. I was going to become a congressman and maybe a senator and later president of the United States. I had sort of a burning passion for politics. But that changed throughout my 4 years as an undergraduate. I had an experience of profound rejection from an institution of higher learning that I wanted to attend in my junior year. And so instead of going off to England to study there, I instead went to Washington, D.C. and served an internship and was on Capitol Hill and learned that that is no place for good people to be. Well, let's just stay on track. There's much we could talk about this morning. I came back to Atlanta wondering what it was I was going to do with my life. I no longer had that burning desire to go to law school or into politics. So I was casting about a bit, but took classes from a professor who interested me in the life of political philosophy, which asked questions about what is true and what is good and how shall we order our life together to achieve the common good. And those questions seemed particularly weighty. And I was preparing to leave Emory, getting ready to come here to Dallas to study at the University of Dallas. When I was at a party hosted by that professor who had been my mentor, and he said to me in the course of that gathering, "Have you ever thought about ministry? Because you have the gifts for it." And I smiled very politely and, well, I said, "Thank you, Dr. Jeffrey, but remember, you're the one who interested me in political philosophy, and you're the one who wrote my letters of recommendation to grad school, so ministry doesn't really seem to be a possibility, does it?" He smiled genially and said he understood. And it wasn't a week later that I was at one of the last meetings of Wesley Fellowship, the gathering for Methodist students there on campus, when the campus minister said to me, "Have you ever thought about ministry? You seem to have the gifts for it." And I once again smiled politely and said, "Thanks very much, but I'm headed off to graduate school." So here I came to Dallas and the University of Dallas, and it was in the course of that I joined Highland Park United Methodist Church and participated in a Sunday school class for graduate students and young adults. The class was taught by a seminarian at Perkins, and he took us through the important questions of life. What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? What does it mean to be part of a church community? What does it mean to live life in the community? It was asking the same questions in a Christian context that we were asking in a philosophical context. And that for me was the beginning of the process by which I understood myself to be called to ordained ministry, that I had something to say, that I could pursue the questions I'd been pursuing in philosophy as an ordained minister. I found that I could relate to people my age and teach them and engage them in ways they found life-giving and life-affirming. And that, for me, was the beginning of my own call to the ordained ministry, that took on some refinement during my wilderness years in Southern California. Like Bill, I've spent time in Los Angeles, and clearly that experience has a profound effect on people. I think people go there and wonder, what is my life about? To what am I called? And after a period of visiting several churches and not finding one where I was fed, I found a very small congregation that allowed me once again to exercise my own gifts for ministry. They affirmed my work with youth. They affirmed my work as a leader. And so it was then that I was prepared to answer the call and went off to divinity school. And the rest, as they say, is history. And now you're stuck with me. But for that, I give God thanks. I hope, friends, you've heard this morning that our calls will be as individual and unique as we are, and yet the common call is to serve the one true living God. Some of us are called to ministries of servant leadership within the church, the ministry of the ordained, and some of us have been set apart by you and by God for those ministries. But many, many more of us are called to ministries of service and witness and generosity and encouragement. We're called to exercise those ministries in the places where we live and work and study and play. Your ministry may be the ministry of driving a route for Meals on Wheels. Yes, Jen Clendon? Yeah. It may be serving at the Great Garage Sale. Yeah, Dana Harkey? Yeah. It may be singing in choir. Yeah, Betsy and Michael? It may be teaching Sunday school, as Bill does. It may be teaching in a seminary, as Mark does. Your ministry may be one of speaking out against unfair or discriminatory practices in your workplace. Your ministry may be one of ensuring that the people who work in your place of employment receive a fair wage. Your ministry may be knitting prayer blankets or making chrismas. Your ministry may be teaching Sunday school or leading Emmaus groups. There are thousands of ministries available to you, and God is calling you to one of those. Whatever your ministry is, friends, claim it. Rejoice in it, and do it all to the glory of God. You may experience the call that changes everything.